Pastor Eric is actually the first person that I met at the Safe House.
Yeah, I love Pastor Eric.
Yeah, he's great. And so I talked to him, and I was so scared. I didn't know anybody in Columbus. And so Brandy from Damascus Way, she was talking to Pastor Eric. She was like, they kicked her out of our program. And he was like, oh, so you want to bring her over here to contaminate our program? And I was like,
sabotage, huh?
I was like, no, I said, I don't want to contaminate anything, Pastor Eric. I was doing it on my own. So I wasn't mandated. I wasn't forced to be there. And I thought that Damascus Way was, I thought that was God's will. That was where I was supposed to be. And then when I left, I was just like, God, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong? But the Safe House turned out to be exactly what I needed. It was just, I absolutely loved that program.
Wow.
And Tomorrow's Hope, and it was exactly what I needed. So I feel like at that point, God knew what I needed better than I did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He does.
So, yes.
That's so true. He does.
Hello and welcome to Renew, Restore, Rejoice, the Safe House Ministries podcast, where we share stories of the power of God to change lives through Safe House Ministries. Safe House Ministries is based out of Columbus, Georgia, and we are a ministry that exists to love and serve people who have been impacted by homelessness, addiction, and incarceration. I am your host, Phil Schuler, the Director of Development for Safe House Ministries here in Columbus, Georgia. Safe House serves over 1,000 people each month as they transition back into our community. Safe House provides 213 beds for homeless individuals and families and provides many other important services such as case management for obtaining employment, case management for finding a permanent home, over 300 hot meals every day, free clothing, and so much more. One of the most incredible services that Safe House Ministries provides is our free 9 to 12 month intensive outpatient substance abuse program, which is state licensed and has no wait list, setting it apart from nearly all other state licensed recovery programs, which are often very expensive and nearly always have a wait list of 2 weeks or longer. Almost 100% of those individuals staying in our shelters who follow our three-phase program end up fully employed, and 68% of individuals who stay at least one night with us end up finding work and moving into their own home. Thank you for being with us today and listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoy this week's episode.
Good morning. This morning on the podcast, I am sitting here with Amanda, and I'm excited to be here with her. I can't remember who it was, if it was Jamie Lee or Neil, but somebody said to me that Amanda would be a great person to have on the podcast to share her story. So I'm excited to get to know you, to hear about your story and just what the Lord has done in your life. Amanda, I'd love to ask you, if there was one word that you could use to describe yourself, what would that word be?
Humbled.
Humbled?
Yes.
Okay. And what do you mean by that?
I guess I chose humbled because of all the things that, you know, that I've been through in my life, and coming from homelessness and losing everything to God just restoring my faith, restoring my relationship with Him, with my family, with my children, and giving it all back to me tenfold. So it's really humbled me. And yeah.
Okay. So did you grow up here in Columbus, or where did you grow up?
No, I grew up in Tifton, Georgia.
All right. I've been through Tifton. So tell us about that, about growing up in Tifton and what childhood was like for you.
I come from a pretty rough family. Addiction is my entire family are addicts. And my mom was an alcoholic. All of my family are addicts, and they're still in active addiction. So growing up as a child, that from the time I can remember, addiction has been very strong in my family. So I just remember my mom was always gone. When she would come home, she was always drunk. And so addiction really wasn't something that we were taught not to do. Don't do drugs. It was the complete opposite.
It was a part of growing up. Your parents were both, your mom, your dad, you lived, they both of them were there, and both of them were in addiction.
Yeah. My parents separated when I was like 8 years old, I think. Right. We were really young. And then my mom moved to Florida and my dad was in Tifton. We were always separated. My brother and I were always separated. I was either with one parent in this place or
so
with the other.
So you went back and forth through your childhood. Sometimes you were in Tifton, sometimes you were in Florida. You split the difference. Sometimes you were with your mom, sometimes with your dad.
Yeah.
Right. And your mom was the one that was?
Yes.
In?
Active addiction and alcoholic.
Okay. And she was in Tifton?
Florida.
In Florida. Okay.
Yes.
And your dad was also, was he in addiction as well?
He was for a little while when my parents separated. I guess it just sent him down a spiral, and he started smoking crack. And he did that for a few years, and we lost everything. He lost everything that he owned. And that was pretty rough because we were kids, and we didn't understand addiction at that point. My brother and I were really young, and he would disappear for days at a time, and I just remember. So fear just really was set.
So you were how old at this point?
About eight or nine years old.
And you had a brother?
Yes. And he's 2 years older than me.
You were eight, he was 10, and your dad would just disappear?
Yes.
And you guys were home alone?
Yes.
At 8 and 10? Wow. So what did you do during those times?
We pretty much raised ourselves. And my brother and I were, when we did live together, and then my dad met this woman. And so he pretty much just pushed us off on her, and she took care of us for many years. But he only smoked crack for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And then he promised that he was going to get clean, and he did. And then my dad was my rock for until the day he died.
So he got clean.
Yes.
How old were you at that point?
When he got clean?
Yeah.
I was about 10, maybe 10 or 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So he became a more positive influence at that point.
Yes.
Okay. He was clean. He was taking care of you at that point?
Yes.
Okay. So carry us through the rest of childhood.
Hey. So I've really always stayed with my mom. I lived with my mom more than I did my dad. And
she was in Florida. So you spent most of your childhood was with your mom.
Yes.
And then down in Florida after she moved to Florida.
Yeah, and my mom and her family, they were all real bad alcoholics. And that was pretty hard growing up with a mother that was an alcoholic, and her family, her sisters, they fought so much. Every time they would come home, there would be a fight. And then it seems like every man that my mom got with after her and my dad split up just would beat her so bad. And it was hard. It was hard. I just remember from being a little girl just always having this fear and anxiety. And
fear, like a physical fear, like fear that he was beating your mom, he might abuse you as well.
They never abused me, but they would beat her to the point where a couple of times they almost killed her.
Oh.
And then we were little. I was little, so there was nothing really that I could do about it. And I was really mad at her that she continued to let these men do this to her. I didn't understand it, you know. And I mean, I did not understand why she would let these men just beat on her the way that she did. Oh. But now that I'm older and I've been through addiction, it took me many years of going through what she did to understand. I understand it now, but I don't.
Yeah. So what were the teenage years like for you as a teenager? What was that like?
I started doing drugs when I was 13.
Wow.
So
how did you get started into that? Was it?
Because my family are addicts.
So it was just around and you're like, oh, let me try this.
Yeah, I was 13. I started smoking weed. It started with marijuana. And then I started smoking weed with my cousin and my mother.
Yeah.
And then my brother at that point was already drinking. He started drinking when he was like 10.
So it just built up from there?
Yes. And then when I turned 16, I think, is when I started doing hard drugs. So I never really had any kind of discipline. You know, our parents
growing up, you just raised yourself, as you said.
Yeah.
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 Okay. So you're doing marijuana.
Yes.
And then
at 16, I started doing hard drugs. I remember I started experimenting with cocaine and acid and ecstasy. And so from 16 up is when my life, the drugs pretty much started controlling me.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So tell us about that. So you're 16, you start doing those hard drugs. You're still living with your mom in Florida?
Yes.
Okay. So what happened from there?
For several years, I was just, it was just like a recreational thing. It's not, it didn't really have a stronghold on me at that point. And it wasn't until I think I was 23 and I started doing meth that it really got a hold of me.
Did you graduate high school?
No.
Okay.
No, so I dropped out in the ninth grade. So school wasn't really a priority of mine. Like I said, I never had any kind of discipline growing up. My parents, they didn't push us to do better. So I wish that they would have.
So dropped out of high school in ninth grade, still living home. Yeah. This is in your early 20s, maybe this time period you still using, living at home, early 20s.
Yeah.
Okay. And how were the bills paid, like rent and all those things?
My mom has always worked. She's always worked. Okay. She was a functioning addict. She's always worked and paid her bills pretty much my whole life. I've lived with my family. And they took care of all of that for me.
Okay. So how old were you again when you started the methamphetamine?
I think like 23.
And you said it really started getting worse at that point.
Yes. Yes. And so I had my first child when I was 20. And so my oldest son, he's 23 now.
Okay.
And
this was in Florida?
No, I had moved back to Tifton at this point.
Okay.
My mom and I moved back to Tifton when I was like 18.
Okay.
And she lost her job. And so we just decided to come back home where our family is. And,
yeah, to Tifton. And then, so you got pregnant at 20?
I was 19.
Okay.
I had him when I was 20.
Okay.
And I was clean. I was clean through my pregnancy and after I had him. And then I started taking pain pills. It started with pain pills. And then it just progressed. And then I started snorting cocaine with my family. And then I was introduced to methamphetamines.
At 23 is when that was?
Yeah.
What's your son's name?
Elijah.
Elijah. That's a good name.
Yeah.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
You familiar with the Elijah in the Bible? The prophet?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. Elijah's 3 years old. You started on meth. And it got a lot worse from that point?
Yes. So I did meth for a little while, and then I was introduced to crack cocaine. And that really took me, it really took me down. I left my son with my father. I would run off and run the streets, and I was pretty much doing whatever I could to get high.
Just going from friend house to friend house, getting high, sleeping on couches or wherever.
Yeah.
Was that a several year period of time or was that a several month period of time?
No, I mean, it was a couple of years.
Just,
I mean,
and you didn't really care
about jail. So I knew, and see, so since my father, he was my enabler, so he took care of my son for me and I knew that my son was safe.
So you didn't have to worry about Elijah and you just.
Yes. And I knew that I could go out and get high, and then I would come home and rest, and then I would leave again.
Okay.
And then that happened for several months, and then it just got to the point where I just quit coming home. The drugs had just really had started taking me down, and I just quit coming home, period. And then I went to jail. And then that was when
How long
I went,
were you in jail?
I was in for about 3 months.
Okay.
But I got sentenced.
Drug charges? Or was it you were on drugs and committed other acts of crime and that's...
Yeah. So I got two felony charges when I was 23 and it was theft by taking. And so the judge had sentenced me to a year in prison, but he suspended it upon completion of a rehab. And that was the first time that I went into treatment.
Okay.
And so I did that for about a year.
That was a program in Tifton?
It was in Columbus, and Butler is the Golden Rule.
Okay. That was the first rehab program you went through.
Yes.
Okay. And that not successful, though?
I mean, I loved it. It was great, and it really helped me. When I graduated, I come back home. I stayed clean for a few years. I actually started my own little cleaning business.
Yeah?
Yeah. And I had gotten me a few houses, and I did that for a while. And then... And then my dad committed suicide.
Yeah. How old were you at that point?
I think I was, it was back in 2012.
And how old was Elijah then as well?
He was 12.
And was Elijah really close to your dad? Yes. I guess he had, your dad was raising him at that point.
Yes. So they were really close because my son's father don't, he's never really had anything to do with him. And so my dad was like his father as well. And I was really close with my dad. I was closer with my dad than I was with my mom. So when he passed away, I really didn't. I was mad. And I was mad at God. Really, I didn't understand because he was depressed. And he just decided to take his own life. And so when that happened, I didn't really know how to handle that pain. And so I started, it started with Xanaxes. You know,
just
I started
to numb yourself to the pain?
Yeah. So I started taking Xanaxes and then it just kept progressing. It was just like one thing after the other. And I was really just trying to just feel something other than that pain of losing him.
Yeah.
So you were I didn't know how to live without him.
So Xanax, and then you just more other drugs as well?
Yes. And then I'd gotten married. I got married to my husband now. And then it was 2 days after I got married that my dad decided to kill himself. And
you said it was around 2012?
Yes. Yeah, it was 2012.
What's your husband's name?
Michael.
So you and Michael had just gotten married, and then right after that, your dad committed suicide, and that sent you into just a spiral with Xanax and other hard drugs at that point?
Yes.
Was your husband a user, or was he was?
Yeah, we were both addicts. And so really, at that point, I really didn't know how to live without my dad. And my brother and I both, and my son, we were just completely just lost. And my brother started drinking so bad that he started having seizures, and it was bad. And it had gotten to the point to where we lost everything. I sold my dad's trailer. I sold his vehicles.
Were you and Michael living there at your dad's trailer, being married? Okay.
Yeah.
And you're essentially took the responsibility back on of raising
Elijah.
So you had to sell the trailer.
Yes.
So what happened where did you guys go from there? Where did you live?
Really, we just bounced around from place to place. We started living with my husband's mom, and she was pretty much taking care of us at that point.
She was clean? She wasn't an addict?
Yeah, no, she's clean, but she gets a disability check. We was living off of her.
Wow. Were you and Michael working? No?
No.
Just using drugs and...
Yeah.
Okay. What happened then from there?
At that point, we was doing so many drugs. My husband and I, we fought all the time. And it was really a toxic relationship. We were both miserable. And we've learned that drugs and love just does not mix. You cannot have a healthy relationship being on any kind of drugs.
Yeah.
And so we separated, and then we'd get back together, and we would separate. And so finally it had gotten to the point that we separated and we stayed separated. And then my son and I started living with my family, and we just bounced around from place to place.
Cousins, whoever you could live with. So like a lot of your extended family, they're all up around Tifton.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and all of them are on drugs too. It fit the situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You're separated from Michael, living with Elijah, just bouncing around from whatever house, whatever relative would take you in for a while.
Yes.
And then did it get worse from there?
Yes. Yeah, it got a lot worse. I started doing meth again. And at this point, I was so mad at God that I literally told the Lord that I'm done with you. I don't want anything else to do with you. I can do this on my own. And
had you grown up in church? Like, did you have a relationship with the Lord at that point?
Yes. Yeah, I did before my dad committed suicide. I was in church all the time.
Would you consider yourself born again? Have you received Jesus? Okay, and you did that when you were young?
Yes.
Okay. So you're...
I mean, I've always been a believer. But we wasn't really raised in church.
And, yeah.
And so when I went to the first program, you know, we went to church all the time. And so then when I come back home, you know, had met this woman that was a really godly woman, and she took me under her wings.
Yeah.
And she introduced me to church and just to the Christian living. And I followed after that and what she had.
Yeah. But then when your dad died, you got mad at God.
Yes.
And that's when things started spiraling, bouncing around with relatives.
Yes.
Then did you end up homeless after that? Or did the compassion of your relatives run out and that no one would let you stay with them anymore? Or what was happening then?
Really, it was because my son was staying with my family, and because my family are all addicts as well, we just kind of bumped heads. And it was really when I started shooting dope,
like with a
needle.
Okay.
Yes, and then I just.
That's a higher intensity.
Yes, most definitely. Yeah. And my life got really bad at that point. When I started shooting dope through with a needle, it got real bad at that point. So, and then I became homeless. I was sleeping in the woods.
Wow. Was that scary?
At that time, no.
Because you were just high and it didn't register to you. You're just so high on the drugs.
I mean, it was miserable, but at that time, it wasn't really scary then. But looking back on it now, then it terrifies me to think that it could just take one bad decision to go back to all of that. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah.
Wow. So you're shooting dope, homeless, and still in Tifton at this point?
Yes.
Living in the woods. So how long was that period?
It was about 8 years. It was off and on for about 8 years. I wasn't always in the woods or whatever, but I would bounce around from people's houses, but they were all addicts.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much like dope traps.
Yeah.
Everybody in there was getting high.
Were you ever incarcerated for times at that period as well?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I've been in and out in jail since I was like 23.
Was that the darkest time period?
Yes.
Okay. From there, what happened that helped you to turn that corner to better things?
I was just miserable. It had gotten to the point where I would sit there and cry before I would do a shot of dope. It was to the point where I was just absolutely miserable. I had lost everything and everybody that I absolutely loved in my life. And I had a baby. I had a baby in the worst part of my addiction, and I lost him to defects.
So this was a younger sibling of Elijah?
Yes. He's 4 now, and I still don't have any rights to him. He's been adopted. And
what's his name?
His name's Matthew.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
And that was really hard. When they took him from me, at that point, I didn't really care if I lived or died. And I was doing so much dope that it was probably enough dope to probably kill a horse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because it was just to the point where I just did not care anymore.
So that them taking Matthew, that just hit you so hard as a mother. Just with the emotional feelings, that's when you just didn't care anymore?
Yeah. So after they took him, I went even further down from that point on. And at this point, I really haven't talked to Elijah in several months. I quit just reaching out to him. I was so ashamed and did not want him to see me like that. But I knew he was safe. He was staying with my family. But I know that I've hurt him. And I know that it had to be painful for him not ever knowing where I was.
Yeah. Were you worried about him starting to use drugs?
Yes, but I'm so grateful that he chose not to do that.
That is a blessing.
Yes.
So he saw what was happening to his relatives and his family. And he made the conscious choice to accept that wisdom and say, I don't want that. And I'm going to stay away from that.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yes. Wow. How did you get out of that dark time period? What happened that led you out?
I had surrendered to God so many times in the middle of my addiction. I was just throwing my hands up and I was like, God, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. But I still stayed in my addiction. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I remember exactly what happened, you know, the night that I truly, really surrendered to God. I dropped to my knees and I had been up for a week, maybe. And I dropped to my knees and I just started crying and I just started praying. And the next day, I decided to make that choice. And I went to the hospital and had myself 10-13. Told them that I was suicidal.
Okay.
And so they sent me to the crisis center. And I found a program to go to.
In Tifton?
Yeah, it was in Douglas.
Okay.
But it's probably about 30 minutes from Tifton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I was there for about 4 months. But it was just too close to home.
Yeah.
And I relapsed. And so I went back to the crisis center. And they sent me to Columbus. I originally come to Columbus to go to the House of Time.
Okay.
And it just wasn't for me. That program wasn't for me. I know several women that have went through that program and they loved it. But so I left there after 6 days. Walking.
You just walked out?
Yeah. Yeah, I just left.
Where'd you go from there? You just walked out? Did you just living on the street for a little bit?
No, I left there to go to another program that I had heard about, Damascus Way.
Okay.
And so I went to that program and I was there for maybe 3 weeks and got kicked out.
Oh, what'd you get kicked out for?
Because I was having some medical issues and I went to the hospital and they gave me some unauthorized medicine at the hospital. So as soon as I came back to that program, they kicked me out.
They tested you and so something that the hospital had given you.
You know, from the hospital, and they said that it was an unauthorized medicine. They released me from that program and then they took me to the safe house. And that's how I found the safe house.
Some staff from that program took you over to safe house.
Yes.
Okay. Because they felt like you're not going to be in our program. Maybe you can get help here.
Yes.
So what happened then?
Pastor Eric is actually the first person that I met at the safe house.
Yeah. I love Pastor Eric.
Yeah. He's great. And so I talked to him and I was so scared. I didn't know anybody in Columbus. And so Brandy from Damascus Way, she was talking to Pastor Aaron. She was like, they kicked her out of our program. And he was like, oh, so you want to bring her over here to contaminate our program? And I was like,
sabotage, huh?
I was like, no, I said, I don't want to contaminate anything, Pastor Eric. I was doing it on my own. So I wasn't mandated. I wasn't forced to be there. And I thought that Damascus Way was, I thought that was God's will. That was where I was supposed to be. And then when I left, I was just like, God, what am I doing? What am I doing wrong? But the safe house turned out to be exactly what I needed. It was just, I absolutely loved that program.
Wow.
And Tomorrow's Hope, and it was exactly what I needed. So I feel like at that point, God knew what I needed better than I did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He does.
So, yes.
That's so true. He does. So you talked with Pastor Eric. You were essentially homeless, having been kicked out of the program.
Yes.
You're homeless. You're talking with Pastor Eric. Was it a fast transition? Was he able to get you into Grace House then, the women's shelter?
Well, it was the Trinity then.
Okay, at that point.
So yeah, it didn't take but a couple of hours maybe. He was like, just have a seat out here and let me see what I can do. And it wasn't but a couple of hours. And he had me a bed at the Trinity and Tomorrow's Hope.
Wow. So you were at the women's shelter, which was at that point Trinity House.
Yes.
And you started immediately. You were enrolled in the Tomorrow's Hope program for the substance abuse treatment?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So walk us through that. So if you're being at Trinity House, the women's shelter, starting in Tomorrow's Hope, what was that like?
For me, I loved it. I absolutely loved Tomorrow's Hope. And I feel like, you know, you get out of the program what you put into it. And at that point, I was so ready for change that it was exactly what I needed. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. I've been to programs in the past where you're like locked down. You can't leave. But Tomorrow's Hope was completely different for me.
Yeah.
And just that little bit of freedom that they gave us, and still being able to work the program and find a sponsor, which was amazing. You know, just to be able to find a sponsor and to work the steps, it was just exactly what I needed.
Wow. Now, how long were you at Trinity House and enrolled in Tomorrow's Hope?
The program is 9 months, and I think I was there for about 11 months.
Okay.
And then they helped me find the and then I went through the housing program.
Through Safe House, the housing. So at what point was that? What time period was that? Like, how long ago was that?
I've been in Columbus for almost 3 years now.
Okay.
Yes.
And when you were able to get out of the women's shelter and complete the Tomorrow's Hope program, how long ago was that?
I think it's been about 2 years.
Okay.
Maybe a little more than 2 years.
Yeah.
Because my husband followed me up here.
Okay.
So when I was at Damascus Way, the Valley Rescue Mission, he actually come up here to go, and he went to the men's Valley Rescue Mission.
Okay.
And so he come up
for his
here,
addiction?
Yes.
Did he stick with that, and did he make it through that whole program?
Yeah, he graduated the program. And so he worked his program and I worked my program. And
the same time period, both?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow.
And so he's a recovering heroin addict, and I'm a recovering meth addict. And I feel like us working a program in separate places was exactly what we both needed.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
that's a beautiful story. Just him, the Lord using Valley and their program to get him clean into a better place, the Lord using Safe House and Tomorrow's Hope to get you clean into a better place. And so then what was it like after you both graduated and came back together?
I just want to say this. Now, looking back on it, when I thought that Damascus, that the Valley was where I was supposed to be, now looking back, I realized that I only went there to get my husband to the Valley.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? God used me to open that door for my husband to go to the men's program because it was exactly what he needed and he loved it.
God knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Definitely.
I love just, and we don't ever know it when we're in the moment.
Yes.
But then there are those times when we can look back and see the hand of God at work and just his sovereignty in directing us. It's beautiful.
Yes.
It's awesome. Definitely. So you were successful in completing the Tomorrow's Hope program, the moving on ceremony. He graduated the Valley Rescue program.
Yes.
What then? What was the next step?
Tomorrow's Hope has a work program. So they do allow you to work. And the first job that I had here in Columbus was through Anchor Pack.
Okay.
And getting that job at Anchor Pack, it just gave me a sense of pride, not in a selfish way.
Yeah.
But
self-worth, you know, something meaningful, like you can give back and contribute. And
yes, I mean, because it's the first job that I actually got up and went to work every day, and I enjoyed it. And it just gave me a sense of responsibility.
Yeah.
And I was there. I mean, I showed up and I worked and I gave it my all. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I was there for 2.5 years, maybe.
Okay. So you started there while you were in the Tomorrow's Hope program.
Yes.
And then you stayed and just kept working there after you went through the moving on ceremony and graduated. And
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And your husband, he came through Valley Rescue Missions program and he started working.
Yes.
So then did you guys immediately get back together, move in? You're still married, so you got your own place at that point?
Yeah. Before we both came to treatment, we were not together. My husband and I had not been together in years.
Okay.
And it had been a few years since him and I had been together because we just could not be together in our addiction.
Yeah.
But us coming here.
But you never got divorced. You stayed married. You just were separated through that time period.
Yes. But I did pray. We both prayed for God to restore our marriage. And then that's exactly what he did. Our relationship now is better than it ever has been. You know what I'm saying? And yeah. God has just, he's doing some amazing things in our lives. My son is up here with me. He's working at Anchor Pack.
Really? How old is he now?
He's 23.
Elijah's 23?
Yeah.
Wow. And he's working at Anchor Pack.
Yeah.
He's doing well. Is he living on his own? Is he living at home?
He's living with me.
Okay. Yeah. Saving up some money.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good news. Yeah. Is he wanting to go to college or is he just working, saving up money, trying to figure out what he wants?
Yeah, I don't know if he's really wanting to go. I've been talking to him about school, but he's not really.
Yeah.
He's not trying to hear it right now. but to be honest with you, I'm just blessed that he's not strung out on drugs and out on the streets. And I'm just so grateful that he didn't decide to take the path that I did, because he could have.
Yeah.
The opportunities were there for him to go down the same road as me, but he chose not to. And I'm just so blessed that he just chose to not live that life. And he gets up every day and he goes to work. And
I am grateful that the Lord protected him from that life and
kept him.
I'm excited. You're just giving me joy in my heart just to hear how good things are, and a good, stable, wonderful, joyful marriage. Elijah's doing well. Now, are you still working anywhere?
I went to the only reason why I left Anchor Pack is because my health hasn't been so good the past couple of years or so. And it just got too hard on my body. And so I just felt like I couldn't give it my all anymore.
Okay.
And then so I went to the safe house. I put in an application. They called me within 10 minutes and was like, if you want the job, you've got it. You know, and they hired me for a weekend position.
Yeah. So you're working at Safe House Ministries on the weekend?
That's how it started.
Okay.
And then so I talked to my boss at Anchor Pack, and he was like, Amanda, we can let you work a couple of days a week here if you want to do that. And I was like, just let me pray about it. And that's what I did. I prayed about it all weekend. I just felt like God just kept saying no. And so I turned it down at Anchor Pack. And I worked there one weekend, and they called me for a full-time position at Safe House.
So what are you doing?
I work the front desk.
At the Hamilton Road location?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So really, I check in the clients, I scan them in, organize the shower times, and direct the phone calls whenever people call.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's great. I love it.
How long have you been there working at Safe House?
I think maybe 2 months or a little more.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yes.
And you like that? You love it?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And it's a lot easier on my body.
Okay. Good. And then what does Michael do?
He works in landscaping. The Valley has a company. They hire a lot of guys that complete the Valley program.
Yeah.
And so now he works for Outdoor Detail. And he's been there since he graduated.
That's good.
And we had, the Safe House had got us a house on 2nd Avenue. And I think I was there maybe a year. And then we prayed for God to help us find a home. And we did. His boss had a double wide trailer in Harris County. So now we live in Waverly Hall in a nice house. And we love it.
That's awesome. I love that. The first place you guys lived after completing the programs was Safe House Ministries got you a place through the Rapid Rehousing Program, and you were able to, like, some assistance, and you were there for maybe a year, and then you guys got this place in Harris County.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And his mom is living with us now. She's got some health issues.
Yeah.
And so we moved her up here with us, and my son lives with us. And we've got plenty of room in that big trailer. And I love it. It's absolutely amazing. And really, for me, I'm to the point now in my life to where I have really just been seeking a deeper relationship with the Lord.
Yeah.
And right now, And it's just every day I wake up with just that zeal for God, just that burning desire to want to go deeper with Him.
I love that. That is so awesome. Are you guys going to church anywhere as a family?
I work on Sundays. We was going to the River of Life.
Yeah.
And then since now that I'm working on Sundays, we hadn't really been going. But like I said, I've been trying to go to Take the City.
Yeah.
They've got a pastor over there that preaches, and I can catch him sometimes when I get off on Sunday afternoons.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Is Michael a believer in Christ and a Christian as well?
Yes.
Yes. That is exciting. I'm so happy. I'm so happy for you guys. I am thrilled with joy that God has taken you both from such difficult times and set you on a stable foundation and just put you in a place of blessing. Amanda, is there any question I did not ask you that I should have, and anything that you want to add?
Yeah, let's see. I just want to say I've lost so many people to overdoses and addiction. And it really just breaks my heart. It seems every time I get on my phone, somebody else has died from overdosing. And it just really breaks my heart. And so I just hope that my story can spread the message of hope. Because people that know me know how bad my addiction was and where I've come from. And, you know, I just want to say, if I can do it, then so can you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. Any other piece of advice or wisdom that you might want to offer?
Just believe in yourself. You know, change starts with you. And all the times that I was still in my addiction and I surrendered, I guess I just thought that just like this just miraculous thing was going to happen. And then I was just, everything was just going to go away. But that's not how it was. I had to take that next step.
Yeah.
To get clean. And yeah.
That's good. Yeah. God is there to help you, but you have to take the steps to meet Him. And
yes. Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's good. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Amanda, do you mind if I close us in a word of prayer?
Yes.
Okay. Dear Father, thank you. My heart really is filled with joy in just hearing Amanda's testimony and what you have done to bring her out of the great darkness. Lord, my heart hurts for all that she's had to endure, but my heart is filled with joy at your grace and your mercy and your blessing upon Amanda and Michael and their marriage and Elijah, that he's doing well, that he's stayed away from the drugs, that you've protected him from that. Thank you. Father, bless his path ahead. Bless his future. I just pray you'd guide him and direct him. Help Elijah to look to you and to follow you. Help Amanda and Michael bless their marriage. Help them to both look to you, to follow you. Protect their whole family from any snares or traps the devil might want to set to hurt them. Keep them safe. Keep them stable. Keep them in a place of joy and blessing, and help them, Amanda and Michael and Elijah, to be able to be a help and a blessing to others. I know just hearing Amanda's story has been an encouragement to my heart, and I pray that you would use this story and this podcast to be a help and an encouragement and a blessing to all of those who hear it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
We look forward to being with you again next week as we share another testimony about the power and the goodness of God to change lives through Safe House Ministries. If you are someone listening to this podcast that loves to hear these stories of the great things that God is doing in changing people's lives for the better, and if you would like to be a part of that work, please reach out to us. You can reach us at 2101 Hamilton Road, Columbus, Georgia, 31904. You can call us at 706-322-3773, or you can email us at info@safehouse-ministries.com.
Thank you so much for being with us this week for the Renew, Restore, and Rejoice podcast of Safe House Ministries. We pray that God will bless you this week, and we look forward to having you back with us again next week for a new episode.